Luke chapter 17. Suppose one of you had a servant ploughing or looking after the sheep. Would he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, "Come along now and sit down to eat"? Would he not rather say, "Prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink. After that, you may eat and drink"? Would he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, "We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty." This is the gospel of the Lord.
I seem to be saying this a lot recently, but those aren't very Christmassy readings, are they? Hopefully the logic will become clear why we're doing them tonight as we go through. But to be honest, I think I've just been struggling to feel Christmassy this year, and I was trying to work out what was going on in my heart, and I wondered whether it was something to do with the number of funerals we've had recently as a church family, and I think that was probably part of it. But I felt like something deeper was going on, and I couldn't work out what it was. And I read a sermon on Luke 17 the other day, and the Lord just put his finger on something that was going on in my heart. And I don't know if it, well, as we go through it, whether maybe it resonates with you too. I felt like it just did me a world of good. So I'm hoping as we go through it, it'll be helpful. It's quite fun. If you've got Luke 17 open in front of you in one of the church Bibles, it's on page 1051. It might be worth following it along, because it's a little kind of secret parable. No one really kind of knows about it. It's not like one of the kind of bestseller parables like the parable of the Good Samaritan or the parable of the lost son that we at least kind of feel we ought to have heard of. This is the parable of the unworthy servants, and it's not that complicated. Verse 7, suppose one of you had a servant ploughing or looking after the sheep. Would he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, "Come along now and sit down to eat"? Would he not rather say, "Prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink. After that, you may eat and drink"? And then would he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you've done everything you were told to do, you should say, "We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty." So there's this guy, he's got a servant, he's been out in the field all day, he's been looking after the sheep, he's been ploughing, he's kind of comes home, he's a bit achy, he just wants to collapse on the sofa, watch some mindless TV, have a beer, and the master says, "Look, I've got a few things to do, then I'd like my tea at 5:30, please, and then you can clock off after that." And when the servant gets his tea ready, the master doesn't say, "Oh, mate, thank you so much for sorting out tea. You are the best. I totally owe you one." The servant has just done his job. Now, I find it hard to connect with that because I don't have a servant, and it's kind of not something we're particularly familiar with. But I read something the other day that helped me with this. It said, let's imagine we've gone out for a family meal. We're at a nice restaurant. And the waiter takes our menu. It's getting late in the evening. It's, say, what, 9:30. The waiter takes our order. We've kind of looked through this amazing menu, and we've ordered. The food's taken a while, and then it's come, and it looks amazing. And the waiter serves around everyone, and then pulls up a chair, and instead of giving you your plate, sits down and starts tucking into it himself. That'd be a bit weird, wouldn't it? And we say, "Well, what are you doing?" And the guy goes, "Well, oh, mate, I've been here since 3 o'clock this afternoon. I've only had half an hour's break. I'm really hungry. I just feel like I'm entitled to have a bite to eat and a bit of a rest now." See, it just doesn't work like that. When I worked in a pub, I was pretty bad behind the bar. You really wouldn't have wanted me serving you, but I was never that bad. I never sat down and kind of started eating one of the customer's food. Or let's take another example. Someone's just bought a house. They're really excited about it. House of their dreams. And it's taken them ages to find it. And the estate agent's been looking. They found it. It's all gone through. The contract's sorted. But just as they're driving up into the drive with the removals van, there's another removals van there. Okay, well, that's a bit odd. What's going on? And the estate agent is moving her family in as well. I said, well, I put in all the work to find this house. I just kind of feel like it's only right that I'm entitled to live here too. See, it would be a very strange thing to do. If someone is just doing their job, if their job is to serve the customer, then doing that doesn't somehow earn them extra kudos. It doesn't get them extra rewards for doing what they were meant to be doing anyway. Now, Jesus applies that spiritually to his followers. Verse 10, he says, "So you also, when you've done everything you were told to do, should say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty.'" What is Jesus' point? Jesus' point is God is not our servant. The God of the universe is not our servant. And I wonder if part of the reason in the Western world why we find it so hard to get traction with the message of Christianity is that we find that very hard to believe. And I find that kind of my heart buys into that. We start to see God as some kind of cosmic butler, maybe at best the sort of friend. We do something for him and then he'll owe us one. And Jesus says to me in these verses, "Simon, God owes you nothing. He really does. He owes you nothing. He is the creator. He has given you life. He's given you breath. He's given you a world to live in. He's given you a family to care for and be cared for by. He's given you clean water to drink, a mind to think. He's given you a tongue to speak. He's given you legs that can walk. He's given you a body that is so infinitely complex, there is no way any scientist in the world could build a single cell out of it, out of the raw materials. And this parable says, Simon, God is not needy. He does not need you to be his friend because he is lonely. He is the boss. He is not your servant. He owes you nothing. I wonder if your heart instinctively pushes back against that the way that mine does. I think to myself, I've worked really hard this year. Maybe you're here this evening as a Christian. You think, I've worked really hard for God this year. Surely he owes me something. Doesn't he owe me health or success or reliable friends or the protection of loved ones or a happy marriage or the world to be well ordered the way I'd like it to be? Doesn't he owe me forgiveness or eternal life or something like that? Well, as soon as we step back and think about it, of course, well, how could you owe someone forgiveness? I mean, that's impossible. By definition, forgiveness is completely undeserved. And what is going on in my heart when I start to think like that, what I think has been going on in my heart the last couple of weeks is a sense that I think God owes me. And I've turned the relationship between me and God the wrong way around. See, he is the God I owe everything to. He owes me nothing. And it's horrible, isn't it, when we meet people who are kind of, they give the impression that they're just entitled to stuff. Spiritually, that's a very dangerous thing in our hearts. If we start to think that kind of we're the customer and God is there to serve us, and if he's not doing his job well, we'll look elsewhere for it. I want to say tonight from this parable, I want to say from my own experience thinking about it over the last few weeks, that is a mindset that will suck the joy and the sparkle out of Christmas. See, if we think like that, at best, Christmas will only ever be a kind of cutesy story about a baby. And we need to see whether we call ourselves Christians or not tonight. This parable, Jesus says to us as clearly as he can, God is not our servant. I guess I'm kind of laboring this point. I'm banging the drum because I think I struggle with that mindset very deeply, but here is what the Advent window folk have been calling the big reveal. What is the amazing thing about Christmas? I'm going to read Mark chapter 10 verse 45. We could do this from Luke, but let's do it from Mark because the link to Christmas is a bit clearer. Mark chapter 10 verse 45. Jesus said, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So Jesus, talking about himself, calls himself the Son of Man, says, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. Now, if our first thing we needed to see tonight is that God is not our servant, then the wonderful thing we need to see about Christmas is that God has come to serve us. The God who is not our servant has come to serve us. So King David wrote in the Bible, as Angela read for us, hundreds of years before Jesus was born, he wrote, when I consider the heavens, the works of your hands, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? So David is standing there and he's looking up into the Middle Eastern sky in the days before light pollution. And he doesn't know it, but what he's staring at is 100,000 million stars in our galaxy, the Milky Way. And then millions and millions of other galaxies out beyond that. And David makes the claim that this God, who deals in distances of billions of light years, cares about human beings who are what, like 6 foot tall? It's an extraordinary thing to say. And can we imagine someone standing next to David just scoffing at him, going, "You, come on, David, if there is a God or a life force or some kind of spirit out there, he does not care about you and me." Face it, our lives, we are tiny. We're insignificant in a vast universe that just does not care about us. What possible evidence have you got that the Creator God actually cares about you? And the Gospels say to that scoffer, say to David's friend, come to a stable and see what it looks like when the power that creates a billion trillion stars, each capable of producing a trillion megaton bombs worth of energy every second. Just kind of let those figures just blow our minds for a minute. A megaton bomb, a trillion of them every second from every star, and a billion trillion stars. Imagine what that kind of power looks like when it's condensed into a human being. I kind of think if I could begin to imagine it, I would picture it being someone who's just vast and with rippling muscles. And the Gospels say, no, it looks like a baby in a stable. Not a kind of nice, sterile stable like the Christmas cards, but a stinking, dark, filthy stable. And the Gospels say to David's friend, come to an oppressed people. Come to a teenage mum who's just given birth a long way from home, and in the blood and in the sweat and in the tears that are the natural... Go with any natural childbirth, in the flickering light of a lamp, look into the face of the baby who is God, come to serve you. And then the Gospels say, well, fast forward 30 years. And look at that same mother kneeling in tears, this time not by the natural, but the deeply unnatural blood and sweat and filth of a Roman cross. And if we can, imagine looking up into the face of a man who has been stripped naked and beaten to the point where he is almost unrecognizable as a human being. And look into the face of the God who has come to serve you. Now, that is what my heart needed to hear last week. That somehow I kind of started to think to myself that God owed me something. That somehow he had a duty to serve me. And that, when as soon as we just, I would never have articulated it like that, but it was there. And as soon as we start to think like that, it will rob the joy out of Christmas. Because who is the God who has come to serve and to save his people? It is the God who is not our servant. The God who owes us nothing. Why is Christmas so breathtaking? It is because Jesus did not deserve the suffering he went through. And you and I do not deserve the love that he has shown us. Now, I don't know where you stand with the Lord Jesus this evening. And maybe that for some of us, the idea that God calls us to serve him is something very new. We may not have heard that before. The idea that I need to accept him as my boss might be something we've never heard before. And if that's where you're at, can I draw your attention to the invitation on the back of the order of service to the Simply Christianity course we're running in January. It's a lovely course. We're going to start with an evening thinking about science and God and whether science has disproved God. And then we're going to spend 5 evenings working through Luke's account of Jesus' life to help us make up our own minds about him. We're going to be asking questions like, is the Bible true? Not just kind of true for me in a kind of maybe not true for you kind of way. I mean, really, truly true. Can we trust it? We're going to be thinking, if God is like this, if he comes to serve us, even though he's not our servant, well, what would it look like for us to serve him? Do we want to serve him? And how can he talk about eternal judgment for those who refuse to serve him? It'd be lovely to have you at that course. If you're free, please, please come along. Others of us will be here tonight trusting Jesus as our master, knowing at some level that it is a joy and privilege to serve him. Well, my guess is that most of us need to hear what I've needed to hear again over the last few weeks as I've had a chance to do some thinking about the message of Christmas. That actually the route to joy and wonder at Christmas is not being told that I'm wonderful, that somehow I'm worth it, that somehow I deserve the love that God has shown us. What are we saying as we kneel at the table in a few minutes to take bread and wine together? We are saying that we are unworthy servants. We have no right to be here. Any good that we've done, well, that is only our duty, and there is plenty of that that we haven't done. And we're coming to kneel before the one who, if I can put it like this, didn't do his job. If we perfectly kept God's law, well, we would only be doing our job. But Jesus is the one who didn't do his job. His job, if I can put it like this, was to be worshipped in heaven forever as the glorious Creator God. And what does he do? He comes not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Amen.